Hey, everybody, it's Kenny Malone. Quick note before we start. If you're planning on making a charitable donation this December, we really would encourage you to support Planet Money, but the way that you can do that best is by donating to your local NPR member station. It's really easy. You just go to donate.npr.org/planetmoney. And not only does this help us out, but it supports the amazing, amazing work that the member stations do. And many of us, myself included, we got our start at these stations. They were little incubators for little weird Planet Money people. WLRN in Miami was my home for a long time. My heart is still there, and now you should send your money there, or whatever your local station is. Go to donate.npr.org/planetmoney. Thank you. Here's the show.
After months of scrambling and writing and rewriting and re-scrambling,
members will record their votes by electronic device.
Senate and House Republicans have voted to pass the latest and final version of their tax bill.
The yeas are 224 and the nays are 201. The motion is adopted.
President Trump signed that bill today while we are recording this. This is the largest tax overhaul in decades. And when we say large... Nah, just kidding. That was actually Ben Bernanke's 600-page macroeconomics textbook. The GOP tax bill is way longer than that. Hello and welcome to Planet Money. I'm Kenny Malone.
And I'm Cardiff Garcia.
Cardiff Garcia, famous, one of the hosts of our newest podcast, The Indicator from
Hello.
Planet Money. And he's joining us to try and cram 1,100 pages of tax bill into a single Planet Money episode.
That's right. And today on the show, we answer the questions taxpayers are asking.
For example, should I become Kenny Malone Incorporated or LLC or MDA or DMV or whatever?
And do these tax changes mean our moms will stop bothering us about buying property?
And who is really benefiting from these tax cuts?
Support for this NPR podcast and the following message come from TD Ameritrade, where investing is made more approachable with the help of a financial consultant who is there for you and your goals. For a complimentary goal planning session, visit tdameritrade.com/podcast.
The big headline-grabbing centerpiece of this new GOP tax bill is the cut to corporate tax rates. And we are not going to talk about that. Not yet, at least. We sent Cardiff Garcia out to go deal with that. He's going to bring us what he found later in the episode. And so to kick things off, this one's a bit of a doozy, pass-through entities, which I know, it sounds more like a fake science name for ghosts, but they are very real and they are very confusing and maybe very lucrative now. To deal with this one, we brought in two experts.
Sure. My name's Lily Batchelder. I'm a professor at NYU School of Law.
Lily is also the co-author of a recent paper about the possible loopholes in this new tax bill. That paper has gone surprisingly viral for an academic paper.
We were pretty surprised ourselves.
You are now officially tax paper famous.
A rare status.
We also called up Rohit Kumar,
leader of PwC's tax policy services practice.
Rohit is basically in charge of knowing everything about this new tax bill for PricewaterhouseCoopers, which apparently just goes by PwC now.
I assume there was some extensive branding exercise that decided that was better.
So it's like you're the KFC of accounting firms now.
I suppose, yes.
We should also say that in a previous life, Rohit was a policy director for Republican Mitch McConnell, and Lily, also in a previous life, was the chief tax counsel for Democrats in the Senate Committee on Finance. Should we talk about pass-through now? Are we ready to...
That would be great.
Okay.
So there's basically two kinds of businesses. There are what are called C corporations.
Which are corporations. We're going to talk about those later in the show. They're getting a tax cut. But then there's another way to structure a business, a pass-through.
A pass-through, the easiest way to think of a pass-through entity is it is a business, but where the income of the business is showing up on the owner's individual income tax return.
So one way to think of it is if you're what's called a sole proprietorship and you're, you know, just selling a little bit of crafts that you make on Etsy.
Maybe you make and sell knitted underwear that is totally a real thing on Etsy. It would be pretty complicated and probably too much work or money to set up a whole corporation and file a whole separate tax as a corporation And so we have this other way to structure a business as a pass-through entity,
where their profits are immediately taxed to the owners.
So you sell all of your pairs of knitted underwears, you make whatever profits you get from them, and then you report that as your income.
Right. All of the income rolls up, passes through the business to the individual, and shows up on their individual income tax return.
And these pass-throughs are not just small knitted underwear sellers. I mean, they can be giant international companies with multiple partners. They can be real estate companies like President Trump's real estate company that is made up of a bunch of pass-through entities. And in all these cases, it works the same way. The profits of your business get reported as income by you, the owner or owners, and you pay tax on that income, whatever your tax bracket says you should pay. Now, the new tax bill allows these owners to not pay taxes on as much as 20% of that pass-through income, 20% untaxed money. Part of the rationale is that the new tax bill also has a big tax cut for that other structure of business, corporations, and so it's only fair that both structures get a tax cut. On the other hand, a lot of people feel like this is just another way to give a tax cut to the wealthy.
So if you just looked at the pass-through businesses that exist right now, their ownership is really concentrated among the wealthy. So there's some estimates that over 60% of pass-through business income is earned by the top 1%, which is a lot more than the percentage of wage income that's earned by the top 1%.
Now, it's not like all of those people can take all of that income and simply not pay taxes on 20% of it. There is a built-in threshold, and if you earn more money than that threshold, the bill has some language that may restrict your deduction.
If you give me one sec, I can grab the conference report. I've got it on my desk.
Great.
Can you hear me? Okay. I found it. Okay. So the deductible amount for each qualified trader business is the lesser of A, 20% of the taxpayer's qualified business income with respect to the trader business, or B, the greater of 50% of the W-2 wages.
It's very complicated language, and it may limit the abuse of this pass-through deduction, but it does benefit some kinds of businesses over others. Some professions won't be able to take much of a deduction at all.
So, for example, they excluded a whole class of providers or businesses, service providers, they call them. So doctors, lawyers, accountants, unfortunately.
Again, this applies specifically to high-earning doctors and lawyers and accountants. But other kinds of businesses that own, say, a lot of assets, maybe they've got factories, maybe real estate, they're going to be able to take a better deduction. Overall, these new rules make being a small business, or frankly, a big one, a pretty good deal. Maybe even a better deal than being a regular human employee.
So all of us sitting here who are not pass-through businesses, are we just schmucks sitting here paying more than our fair share?
Well, you may be, but it's really hard to tell until we get some more clarification on what the bill's doing.
And this is the thing about this new tax bill. It came together so quickly, and the ink is still drying on the newest version, that even the people who have been watching this thing like hawks are not entirely sure about every line and every word and how it's ultimately going to be interpreted and enforced. So, yeah, there are a lot of people, myself included, who are wondering, maybe I should ask my company to fire me and then form an LLC and then be rehired, not as a human, but as a company.
It may be possible to sort of go that route, but then, you know, the one note of caution, other than the general note of caution, which is no one should be forming a pass-through entity on the basis of this interview. if it's a wholly artificial arrangement, there's always a risk that the IRS will come back in after the fact and say, which is their official term.
Is that it? That's funny. The IRS is using the same term I tell my dog not to eat garbage.
That's right. Yes.
Yeah.
Also my daughter when she's about to jump off something she's not supposed to.
There you go.
So we've got cuts to business tax rates. They're big cuts. They're a big deal. But personally speaking, when I sit down in front of TurboTax or at an H&R Block, I will almost certainly not be thinking about business tax rates. I will pull out a disgusting shoebox full of receipts and realize, uh-oh, I have no idea if deductions work the same anymore. And the answer is they actually do for now, because these changes don't kick in until you're doing your 2018 taxes, when, in fact, deductions are changing in a big way. I'm going to hand this one over to Elsa Chang.
All right, deductions. These are the things you spend money on during the year that you can take off or deduct from your tax bill. You can list all of these items, which is to itemize your deductions, or you can just take one standard one-size-fits-all deduction. And, you know, these deductions you get to itemize basically reflect value judgments by the government, meaning when the government lets you deduct certain things, that is the government telling you how you should spend your money. Like with charity, the government wants to encourage charitable contributions, so it lets you deduct that. But this Republican plan has done kind of the opposite with expensive homes and high-tax states. What this new Republican plan does is make those homes a little harder to buy and the high-tax states a little harder to live in. The mortgage interest deduction has shrunk, and the state and local tax deductions now have a cap. All right, Howard, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
So I called up Howard Gleckman at the Tax Policy Center, which is nonpartisan, and I asked him, what does the average person do under this new regime of possible deductions?
Okay, so the important thing to know about this bill is there's kind of no average person. So you and I can have the same amount of income, but pay very different taxes.
That is especially true if one of us lives in a high-tax state, because Republicans have just taken a hammer to state and local tax deductions, better known as SALT.
They passed a bill that capped SALT deductions.
How many terrible puns are used to talk about this deduction?
There's lots of them. You know, take this with a grain of salt, you know, blah, blah. We don't want to rub salt in the wound. We don't want a tax cut that's worth its weight in salt.
Okay.
There's a whole bunch of bad puns here.
And because I couldn't resist either, just as too much salt can destroy a good dish, there is now such a thing as too much salt in your deductions. All right, so under the Republican plan, deductions for property taxes and other state and local taxes now cannot exceed $10,000, which is really not good for taxpayers who live in high-tax states. And who lives in the high-tax states?
The high-tax states tend to be the blue states. They tend to be states with lots of Democrats in them.
New York, New Jersey, California. That is why there has been such a huge political fight over SALT. Now, deductions for state and local taxes have been around since the beginning of the income tax system. You know, the original idea was very simple. People should not have to pay taxes twice on the same income. But what ended up happening is that SALT made it a lot easier for states to keep raising taxes. And the biggest beneficiaries of SALT have generally been people who live in rich suburbs and high-tax states. So there's been this perception that the rich states are getting a break at the expense of the rest of the country. But Howard says that's actually not true.
There's this argument that why should low-tax states subsidize high-tax states? And the reality is that those high-tax states generally contribute more to the federal government than get back from the federal government.
What Howard is saying is federal assistance benefits lower-income people, and the numbers show that lower-income people tend to live in low-tax states. High-tax states don't rely on federal programs as much. Anyway, people can argue all day about whether or not downsizing SALT is fair, but there is another deduction that economists have been really excited to scale back, and that is the mortgage interest deduction. What is so irritating about this deduction to economists?
It's what economists like to call an upside-down deduction. You know, we're talking about deductions, you know, for mortgage loans of $1 million. And the question is, do you really want to subsidize people who are buying giant houses that cost $1 million?
Howard is referring to the old rule, which let homeowners deduct interest payments on $1 million or less of mortgage debt. Under the new rule now, you can only deduct interest payments on $750,000 or less of debt. And the reason a lot of economists have wanted to see less of this mortgage interest deduction is because they say it distorts the economy. It favors people with bigger, more expensive homes, people who don't really need help, and maybe the deduction encourages excessive borrowing. But what I really wanted to know is, can I now tell my parents to stop bugging me about buying property? So I'm 41 years old. I still have never been a homeowner. and, you know, I've been renting my entire adult life. My parents are convinced that I am doing the dumbest thing in the world tax-wise. But under this new regime, can I go back to my parents and tell them I'm actually not being that dumb after all?
Hey, Mom, I'm really not dumb. So what's going to happen here is your standard deduction is going to go up quite a lot.
Yeah, under the new rules, the standard deduction I can take now as an individual has doubled to $12,000, while the mortgage interest deduction has shrunk. So Howard says the question for me now is how those two things trade off. And to figure that out, I have to calculate, well, if I were to buy a house, what are the mortgage interest payment deductions that I could take? And if I were to itemize all my deductions, would that total be more than the $12,000 standard deduction I could otherwise take? And it turns out, even under the new rules, it is still a good idea for me to buy a home, as long as I'm not borrowing more than $750,000, which is definitely not happening for me. So, fine, Mom, you're still right.
After the break, actually, you know what? Hold on. Cardiff Garcia.
After the break, corporate income. Tax.
Three words. Stay with us.
Support for this NPR podcast and the following message come from Slack, where work happens all over the world. No more losing time context switching. More than 1,000 apps seamlessly integrate with Slack. So that's less time jumping between tools and more time getting things done. More at slack.com.
All right, back with me again, back from corporate tax odyssey, Cardiff Garcia.
This felt less like an odyssey than like just an audit.
Okay.
Right? This involved going through a lot of line items, I guess, but it was interesting.
All right, Cardiff, I cede the floor to you.
Good, Kenny. And if this bill were a concert, the corporate tax rate cut would be the headline act. We finally arrived. This is the big one. So here's the deal. The corporate tax rate is going down from 35% to 21%. Now, this is a big issue because this tax has been a good source of revenue for the federal government. And over 10 years, the loss to the government just from this rate cut is estimated to be about $1.3 trillion. This may seem like a massive giveaway to corporations, but it's actually something that both Democrats and Republicans have been talking about for years. I mean, I'm a bit skeptical about the bill, so I wanted to talk to somebody who likes it.
Hi, I'm Carl Smith. I'm the Director of Economic Research at the Niskanen Center.
The Niskanen Center is a kind of moderate, neoliberal-ish think tank. Carl has some problems with this bill, but overall he thinks it makes sense.
There are basically two rationales. One is that the U.S. corporate tax rate right now is higher than most other developed countries in the world.
A lower corporate tax rate makes the U.S. a more attractive base for companies. That also means that companies won't have as much incentive to hide their profits overseas with, like, clever accounting tricks.
But I think the larger deal is that it encourages, like, more investment in the United States. And so if the corporate tax rate is lower, that makes more investments profitable. And that should cause more investment, more jobs, and higher income and higher wages for people in the United States.
Let's say we're going to start a corporation, the Planet Money Corporation. So obviously, we'd get a tax cut. Once we have that tax cut and we're going to have higher profits, we'd have to make some choices about how to spend that new money. We could invest it. We could buy new equipment, recorders, computers. We could hire more reporters. Or we could give the current staff some raises. Or we could lower our prices to, well, I guess below free because we don't charge for podcasts. Let's face it, Planet Money was never going to be a great corporation. But anyways, the last option, the one that you've been hearing a lot of people worry about, is that we'd end up giving our shareholders some money back through stock dividends or buybacks. But Carl and other advocates of the bill, they think the investment part, buying new equipment, computers, recorders, they think that that's the most important part of the equation.
So if companies respond by investing more, then that will allow the workers of those companies to be more productive. That raises labor productivity, which increases the total amount that the economy can produce in a given year.
What it means is that investment in equipment and research and other things, that's what will make the Planet Money Corporation more efficient, just better and better at cranking out podcasts. So that's the argument for cutting the corporate tax rate. The economy becomes more productive, we all get richer, plus the U.S. becomes a more competitive place to do business. So the Planet Money Corporation stays here and the government keeps collecting our taxes. A lot of people are skeptical. They still worry that companies would just choose to give the money back to their shareholders. And here's why. Companies' profits have mostly rebounded strongly since the financial crisis. So if they were going to invest more or hire more workers or give raises, they already would have. Carl doesn't buy that criticism. He says that for one thing, a lot of the big rise in profits has gone to just a few companies. So most companies really might use the money to invest. But he also says that even if the tax cut doesn't compel every company to invest more, it could still be good for the economy, even if a lot of companies do just give the money back to their shareholders.
Usually most investors take much of the dividends or what they get from buybacks and they put it into buying back more stock. So it stays, in a sense, in the sort of investment system. And so to the extent that that happens, the money will find its way towards some new investment to be made.
In other words, a good outcome no matter what the companies do with the money.
All right, Cardiff Garcia, you were skeptical, and I'm just curious if Carl has convinced you of anything.
He did convince me about the specific argument he's making about the corporate tax rate cut, that there's a good chance that that'll lead companies to invest at least some of it.
Sure, okay.
That's not quite the end of the story, though, is it? Because
no.
There's something we kind of have to acknowledge about this tax rate cut, which is that most people aren't going to benefit directly from it. The companies benefit directly from it. They're the ones who get the higher profits. But most people are sort of left to hope that the companies then use the money either to invest more and make their workers better, or that they hire more workers, or that they raise people's salaries.
So we need to wait and see who benefits from this. But as you mentioned, this is a costly tax cut. And so it seems a little bit like a risk or a gamble.
I think some of the most powerful criticisms of this bill haven't actually been centered on the fact that it's going to cost the government a lot of money, but rather that if it's going to cost the government a lot of money, there might have been better ways to use that money that would have benefited most Americans. In other words, there's a lot of people who agree that the corporate tax rate at 35% was too high. They just think that there were other ideas that could have had bigger benefits for most Americans.
Cardiff Garcia, thank you for going on a tax odyssey for us. We appreciate it.
My pleasure.
The tax bill is 1,100 pages long. Obviously, we didn't have time to get to everything, but if you're interested in other parts of it, let us know about it. We are planetmoney@npr.org, or you can find us on Facebook and Twitter. Today's show was produced by Sally Helm. Our editor is Bryant Urstadt. Our supervising producer is Alex Goldmark. And one more quick plug to donate to your local NPR member station at donate.npr.org/planetmoney. We really appreciate the support, and not only does it help us do our work, but it supports the important local journalism that NPR stations are doing all around the country. That's donate.npr.org/planetmoney. I'm Kenny Malone. Thanks for listening.